You guys got any wins that you want to share with the group from last week? Can be anything, gents. Don't be afraid to speak up.
Had a couple of PRs last week.
Yeah, you had some really good PRs. So John's a CrossFit phenom. What did you make, the semifinals this year?
Almost semis. I made quarters. I
Made the
wasn't
quarter.
far off from making semis.
That's right. It was awesome.
Sorry, John. Good evening, Greg. Sorry, man. I just thought I'd say hello. I'm joined a minute late trying to get my audio connected.
What's happening, boss?
How's it going?
Good.
I see some new faces on here, some unfamiliar faces. I see Thompson, a very familiar face. My man, glad to see you on here.
Good to
Kurt,
see
thanks for being here. Lewis, how's your peptide stuff coming along, man? Still messed up?
I think Greg gave me a couple of good ideas. I'm gonna try to go more into the fat instead of
Yeah.
going underneath the skin as much as I've been doing, and see if that works out better.
Okay. We doing personal wins?
Yep. Waiting for anyone.
Greg, how's your
John.
diet coming along, Greg? For those of you
Yeah.
that don't know, Greg is currently on an aggressive, well, weight cut, aggressive body transformation. How's that going for you?
Yeah, good man. Once I get used to really low calories, I'm okay. The first couple of weeks was quite a transition. But I'm consistently hitting targets now. Weight's coming off really quickly, so I should be where we need to be come August, which I'm excited for a little bit of a photo shoot that we're all doing as a team, I think. So I got to make sure I keep up with the boys. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Hey, Kurt, so you know you're in on that too, man. You got 6 weeks.
6 weeks. 6 weeks tomorrow, right? I'm counting the days. Don't worry.
Kurt, nobody told you, man, but we just letting you know right now, you're in.
Oh
6 weeks
yeah.
to shred it.
Well, did you see that picture of my hamstring, Ben?
I did. You still got quads, man. You still got quads. You're good. No, no sprinting on this protocol, brother. No sprinting on this protocol.
No, definitely gotta work around it, but it's gonna be done. I saw the ortho, by the way, and he said it's not a complete tear. So he says 8 weeks if I do everything right and don't screw it up, I should be good.
What's your stance right now on personally on stem cells, Kurt?
I mean, for regenerative work, I'm not sure about it in longevity space. I'm not really sure, but I think for regeneration, they're good. And then, it depends on the type of stem cells
Well,
and the
specifically for
source.
your hamstring in this case, right? What are you thinking about
Oh,
that?
yeah. Yeah, even that, or even quite frankly, PRP. I think anything that saturates the area with something that's going to give positive signaling is going to be a benefit. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think there's a. When it comes to those items on a menu, I don't think there's a one size fits all. For some people, I've seen PRP work. Others like negative effect, and they go try some different things like stem cells, and they get a better effect. So I think it's worth it for anyone. I mean, I know these can get pricey, but to find out which system actually works for your body because of the signaling, some of these might work better than others.
Yeah, I agree. So I had both triceps. You may know this. I had both triceps repaired in 2013. Both almost torn, both like big holes, and that was just PRP. So actually, with my own stem cells from a fat graft and then PRP, just miraculous change. And I've done stem cells twice, and I think it's been a great benefit as well. I also have a pretty decent line on stem cells here, which we can talk about a different time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be explored too, not just with muscle tissue, but with soft tissue as far as tendon, cartilage, and all of that. That has to be explored as well. That was one of the reasons this hamstring tore is the muscle. My prep work obviously wasn't right, but the muscle tissue was far stronger than what my connective tissue was set for.
Is that a vote for growth hormone for 3 months or what?
Actually, I'm thinking very seriously about that. Yep,
Yeah,
just going
at
straight
least it's
GH.
yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing a 3 month run every year since I retired. And I feel like it really makes a difference to my connective tissue. I think it really does. Oh, and sorry guys about the tangents, but this is worthwhile for everyone to listen to. So Kurt, you've probably also, I don't know if you've been playing with natokinase. So I was doing high dose natokinase for a while. We recently did, so guys for listening, natokinase is an enzyme, a proteolytic enzyme that breaks down fibrotic tissue, which may be like, hey, it breaks down arthritic plaque. And okay, well, that's great. And, but what we found is it's actually breaking down tissues as well, just excuse me, joint tissues. So like the negative impact has been like excruciating joint pain. And so we just kind of made that connection recently. I don't know, Kurt, if you've had that experience on natokinase.
No, I it was one that I kind of steered away from because of like a lot of the things like that. It was getting the right standard extract amount. So, it's kind of like what people deal with when they're talking about red yeast rice, that those types of things. For me, it was kind of in that category on the heart health side. And I kind of weigh out what's the actual effect. So for me, on the spectrum of supplements and drugs, it's like which one has the highest weighting of impact. And natokinase to me was very similar. It's almost like using berberine versus metformin. Which one's going to have the bigger impact, and what's the upside downside? So I'd never gotten around to actually doing a practical run with it, but I'm glad you told me that because I don't need any soft tissue problems right now.
So both myself and one of our top clients, Matt, have experienced some pretty bad joint pain from it. And stopping basically almost immediately, joint pain goes away. So there's definite correlation. Anyways, we'll let you get back on track, Greg. I know you want to talk about fat loss and.
No, that's cool, man. It was interesting. With regards to, we were talking, so John gave across a couple of his PBs that he hit last week. Based off, he had a new bench PR snatch, right, John?
Yeah, it was snatch and bench press last week.
Nice, brother. I know Lewis hit his, well, I'd say a 30-year PB with his bench press, which was nice to see for a few repetitions. Took 225 for a ride, which was brilliant. Anyone else got any wins that they've got over the last few weeks that they want to share with us? Or Andrew, if any of your clients on here you want to call out on? I heard actually I got a win for John Halgreen. He's actually sticking to his diet plan. Anybody else? Looks
I've had some
jacked.
great client wins lately, man. So all my guys come on Saturday instead of Saturday morning call, but we've got some really great wins. Just I don't think guys are like sticking to the plan. And even if you don't love the plan today, your coach is giving you, sticking to the plan makes such a difference because I know what you're doing. And if it's not getting the result we want, we change it. So the only advice I have is like, you got to drop your ego and just stick to the plan. The guys who stick to the plan get just incredible results.
Oh, for sure. Like as much as I rag on John, man, I saw his most recent photos. Dude looks jacked, and now he looks lean as well, man. He looks great, which is
That's
brilliant to see.
awesome. I'll take those off.
And also, just for reference, before we get into the presentation, I believe that the dates for Costa Rica fly in on the 11th. I believe that starts on the 12th. So if anybody has any interest, think about booking those days out. The page will be going up next week for anybody who wants to actually book on and go. Hell of an experience last year, guys. Genuinely, you won't regret it. I don't think we had a mention of anyone actually regretting going. It was an amazing experience.
Right. I'm trying to make sure it goes on the 11th. I've heard it's going on the 12th. But yeah, I'm trying to make it go on the 11th. So I'm not sure. It'll be the 11th or the 12th. So we'll know ASAP.
What month
Which
are you
airport
guys
are we flying
on?
into, guys?
December, guys. Sorry. So December, seg December, call it the 11th through the 18th or 11th through the 17th. That's Costa Rica. So Kurt, we can talk about that later. And it's flying into San Jose, to San Jose, Costa Rica.
I'm there now, actually.
You're always in Costa Rica. We're rubbing it in.
Good place to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Andrew, how's your knee feeling from stem cells?
Good, man. Really good. I think I told you guys that I was I was really impressed even within like the first 30 minutes because I got 2 days worth of stem cells. Yeah, I felt it pretty immediate. There's a few, I have a little bit of an issue with like behind my kneecap, like some crunching that still exists, but getting stronger every week. And yeah, I've been able to avoid surgery, which I was thankful for. So.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
I take the lead, man. Take it away.
Got it, brother. And just another quick one. So we begin to put together the next 12, what the next 12 months of calls are going to look like for you guys. So we're going to have a lot of really cool, innovative stuff that we're going to go through. We'll obviously start with the basics for all that, and then we'll dig into the weeds on any particular topics. If there's any topics that you guys are seeing out there in the nutrition or training sphere that you want clarified, by all means, drop it in the chat here or put it in the WhatsApp page because it would be really interesting to know about what you guys are seeing or what you guys are confused by because we should be able to add some clarity to that for you as well. So today we're going to go through the science of fat loss in a little bit more detail. So I'll break it down into two different not theories because it's not by no means a theory of fat loss, but we'll touch on the energy in, energy out equation, how we can actually influence that, and what are the major factors that actually lead into weight loss. We'll call it fat loss, but what are the major influences in regards to fat loss for you? And then you can look at in there some of the factors that you might actually be neglecting. A lot of the time, for most of you, it's the simple things that you tend to be neglecting when you're looking at fat loss. We'll touch on a little bit around the actual physiology. So what actually happens when we burn fat at a cellular level. Not as there is some information in there that will be applicable to you guys looking at the physiology, but I just think it's important to emphasize why this stuff happens and where some of the roadblocks might be for you if you're struggling with fat loss. I will touch on all the really standard stuff as well, though, guys, and we'll go through it in 1 second. Let me just share my screen. Yeah. So, and now where did I put it? Excuse me, 1 second. I've got everything else up on my screen except for what I'm looking for. Got it. So, gents, we're going to touch on possibly the things that a lot of you or some of you may be missing when you look at fat loss. It may not be as much the case with you guys, but when I get new clients in through the door, everyone's looking at the tip of the spear when they're trying to figure out where their fat loss roadblock might actually be. But understanding that there's a lot of simple things that we can try and influence when we're looking at fat loss. And fat loss only, right? So this has got nothing to do with muscle gain today. That's going to be a conversation later down the line where we'll go through the science of muscle gain and the stuff that we may be missing in those circumstances as well. But we're going to talk about the energy in versus energy out model. And it's an argument that you constantly see online. So you, as usual, everything online that you see is extremely conflicted because the extremes tend to sell, right? The gray area, people want to hear stories that are either black or white. They don't want to hear the gray area. So they're like, it depends. And a lot of the time when people ask me questions on whether it's a supplement, whether it's a diet plan, my answer is normally a shrug of the shoulders and, well, it depends. It depends on you. It depends on your physiology. It depends what you're doing now, and it depends what the goal is, right? So when we look at dietary adherence or a dietary modality, we need to understand that we don't try and don't get bogged down by dogma. So don't think that one specific diet is going to suit you. Always consider that if someone who doesn't know you tells you they have the diet for you, most likely they found the diet that works for them. Okay? It's important to understand that when we go through this. So we'll look to learn the energy in, energy out model. We'll touch on the physiology of fat loss, and then we'll think about application a little bit towards the end. So, what are the parts within this equation that you're missing? Or is this actually for some of you, probably more so the people who are new within the community that it might actually be a metabolic flexibility issue as to why you struggle to either adhere to a diet or consistently drop body fat. The energy in, energy out equation is complex when you see it, when you see it in its entirety, but it can be broken down quite well and compartmentalized so that you guys can understand it and you can actually take applicable stuff out of it. Because when we look at energy in, it's dictated by the food that we eat and the calories that we absorb. And I want to ask you guys a question, right? It's a tricky one. And it's a little bit of a trick question, but do you guys think a calorie is just a calorie? Or do you think it's more complex than that? I'll give my opinion as well, right? So just put it in the chat. Do you think a calorie is just a calorie? And if you can argue the point, try and argue the point as well. So why do you think a calorie is not a calorie, if you say so? So just put it in the chat, gents. It is. Thanks, Lewis. Anybody else? Calories are not the same. Thanks, Stephen. Unit of energy, but it depends. Quality differs more than just a calorie because different sources have different nutrition impacts. So it's interesting, like the way you guys, and I'll give you my opinion, right, as well. A cal is not just a cal. Different sources impact the system differently. All very true. But I think if you think of a calorie at a very basic level, it is just a measurement of energy. Now, how it reacts within the body is going to differ from person to person. That's absolutely true. But if we think of it just in its purity or in its isolation, a calorie is just that. It's a measurement of energy from the food that we consume. Now, it obviously is going to vary from person to person, depending on the type of calorie that you take in. But nobody out there, because I hear the argument a lot of the time, you tend to see it on like the very, you know, the very far side of functional medicine, where they say, well, the body doesn't measure calories. You're right, but like the body doesn't measure height either, but we still measure that. And that's all it is. It's a measurement. Now, the type of food that we take will be different, but you have to understand, when a coach gives you a caloric target, he won't say, here's 2,000 calories, eat what the hell you want from that. We don't do that. It tends to get layered then on top of that. So I think thinking of calorie as just a calorie is important, but then obviously layering on top of that, what the macronutrient breakdown of it is, what's the micronutrient breakdown of it, will play a role as well. And we can touch on that when we look at like the difference between when we eat proteins, when we eat fat, when we eat carbohydrates. They react differently, but at a very base level, it is just a calorie. I like what Andrew said, but it depends. And I appreciate that. But when we think about the energy inside of the equation, the food we eat and what we absorb, but there's some caveat to that. So you see in certain sects of the population, particularly people who tend to be overweight, their microbiome tends to shift to actually extract more calories from food. And it's not a dramatic amount. It can vary from 100 to 200 calories, which over long periods of time can be influential. But so there is some variety in there from person to person. But when we think about it, I normally just like to leave it as the food that you actually put in your mouth, chew and swallow. Okay. Not too much else on the energy in side of the equation. When we look at energy out, though, it can be broken down into a few different categories. You can think of it as the thermic effect of activity being one of them. And I think as a population, we massively overestimate the effect that actually has. Unless you're the Chris Fudges of the world that does insane amounts of structured exercise. So like he's running 10Ks, he's doing CrossFit, he's a power lifter. He does all sorts. He plays basketball. He does all sorts of insane activities, probably accumulating 1, 2, 3 hours every single day. That will influence the energy outside of the equation. But for the majority of us, for us weekend warriors who train maybe 4 times a week, you know, an hour to an hour and a half, actually, it doesn't influence energy out in the extreme at all. So it's important to remember that. We'll touch on how muscle mass can influence in the sex. So it does play a role. Then you can think the thermic effect of food actually does play a significant role. We'll come back to that in a sec. The one that people tend to put somewhat overemphasis on is BMR. So like their basal metabolic rate, you hear it constantly out there. Like when people say my metabolism is broken, it's very rarely the case where metabolisms are generally broken. But when we look at BMR, it's broken down into these categories. So we got subcategories within it. So we look at muscle mass, we look at hormones, we look at sex, and we look at age. Age, we can affect biological age, right? I guess, but in general, we can't affect age. Some people might argue and say we can affect sex. I'll probably disagree, and we'll leave sex as being something that we can influence. Hormones, yes, we can. And down the line, we were talking about doing one on optimizing testosterone. These will play an influence on energy out. Thyroid hormone, for example, you could pump thyroid hormone into you and you will, chances are, drop body fat. If you pump testosterone in you, chances are you will drop body fat. So hormones do play a role. Muscle mass is something that we all strive for when we come into something called muscle intelligence. Now, how big of a role does it actually play? Probably not as big as most people would want it to be. To say it doesn't influence it, though, it does. But adding 10 pounds of muscle mass may not make a significant difference to your total BMR or the amount of energy that you expend. It doesn't mean we don't chase it for all its other multitude of anti-inflammatory effects, its longevity effects, the ability to actually be able to move, lift, and be active is huge. But you see this in people who are under-muscled when they try and lose weight. It does become difficult for those, and they tend to have to go into bigger caloric deficits in order to drop that body fat. But when we look at all of them in their totality, we touched on BMR, we touched on the thermic effect of activity. The thermic effect of food is interesting, and it can actually influence the amount of weight we lose. Who can tell me which of the three macronutrients? We won't use alcohol here, but like protein, carbs, and fats, which actually burns the most calories in its digestion? Can anybody tell me? Protein. Yeah, right. So it's protein. So protein will generally be somewhere between 25 and 30% of its actual digestion. 25 to 30% of its total calories will actually be burnt in its digestion. It can be significant, particularly if any of you guys are coming in on a lower protein diet. That general switch, forget the satiety side of things, but just that general switch can actually play a big role here. Unfortunately, Stephen, fat's actually the lowest. So fat is about 3%. Carbohydrates is somewhere between 5 and 10. So if you think about it, if you were to eat like 2,000 calories of solely protein, crazy amount. But just as an example, just if you were to eat 2,000 calories from solely protein, hard to get that from an animal source. Rabbit's pretty close. But then realistically, you could be actually only absorbing about 1,400 of those calories. That's pretty significant, right? So the thermic effect of food can actually play a role here in your ability to be able to drop body fat. So eating higher protein diets can be beneficial. Now, I'll touch on it in one second. NEAT is one that I would imagine, now, not for Matt Orban, I see him stepping away, and not for you guys who do really active jobs. But NEAT tends to be the one that's often neglected, and it tends to be the one that's often underutilized when we're trying to drop body fat. So non-exercise activity thermogenesis is unstructured exercise. It's not technically that. In its purest form, it's unconscious movement. So twitching, fidgeting, those kind of things. But in a lot of circumstances, we tend to kind of hijack it, and we use like step count example as a measurement of NEAT. And I think I'll touch on it in one sec, why NEAT tends to be one of the most important factors when we're trying to drop body fat. But in 1 second. So this is generally what we're trying to influence here. So resting metabolic rate, yes, plays the most active role in terms of the amount of energy that we expend, for sure. So our metabolism at its base level will play the biggest role. But we have this thing that occurs within our body. So if I found out exactly, by the way, all this makes up is your total daily energy expenditure. So all of these combined will make up total daily energy expenditure. It's important to understand, though, that when we try to drop body fat, the body will adapt to that, or it'll try to. And the way I like to explain this one, if you think about it ancestrally now, we're no longer really, we don't really fear the tiger anymore. So the threat of being eaten by something else is pretty much gone. The body will conserve energy the vast majority of the time for the average person. So it'll allow us to put on a whole bunch of body fat. It's not as keen on the liberation of it. So it will do something that's called adaptive thermogenesis. So it'll try and close the gap. So if I grabbed one of you guys off the street, if I grabbed John Holgreen and I actually tested him and got his I sent him into the lab. He got all the testing done. We found out exactly what his total daily energy expenditure was, all the calories that he burns in a day or the energy he expends. And if I pulled 100 calories from there, what would happen? Probably nothing, right? If I pull 200, maybe nothing again, because we've got like adaptive thermogenesis. We have this buffer either side where our body allows us to flex a little bit without actually it affecting our homeostatic state. So without it affecting like our base level of where we are now. Okay. So the body will try and adapt. And as we drop body fat and we continue to drop body fat, it will continue to try and close that gap so that we don't lose weight. I like to use bodybuilders as an example for this. Now, probably a little bit more so in regards to unassisted. But if you've ever met a bodybuilder who's getting ready for stage or is a few weeks away from stage and they're sitting at 4% body fat, you can see how far they've gone into this term adaptive thermogenesis. They'll blink slower, they'll speak slower, they'll only move if prompted. You basically have to use a cattle prod to get them to move in that circumstance because now they're at that stage where they have extremely low levels of body fat. So they're trying to conserve energy in whatever way they can. Now, when they get to those extremes, don't get me wrong, there's all sorts of hormonal down regulations and a lot of other things, but NEAT plays the biggest role in here. So when the majority of you are looking at dropping body fat, yeah, you can keep pulling calories, right? You can keep pulling that and keep dropping and dropping and dropping until you have basically no calories left. Of course you can. Ben, what's up, brother?
I was just raising my hand about being the meathead who blinks slower and is doing just acknowledging it. But I guess that's
I
me.
got you. I got you.
Right.
But that is generally what happens towards the end of these things, right? So I'd be interested to know, do you guys actually know what your step count is? I know some of you in there have really high step counts. Have anybody got in here got really low step counts? Come on, chuck your average step down. How many steps do you do in a day? You're all making a fool out of me here. 10,000, 15,000, nice. Nice, fellas. That's actually, I mean, they're good step counts. Thompson, probably not as adequate, probably not exactly what you need going as you're trying to put on muscle, but like step count is still a problem. But when you look at like the way like the World Health Organization, I'm pretty sure they put anything under 6,000 as being like completely inadequate or sedentary, right? So generally with clients, the metabolic activity tends to occur 8,000 plus. So it's really important that we hit 8,000 plus steps daily. And judging by what most of you guys have put down, it's not an issue for you. But if you are on a low step count, it's really important to take into consideration. Now, it's actually really hot in the UK for once, so I'm sweating sitting here. The physiology of fat loss, what actually happens at a cellular level when we try and drop body fat? It's not super important to understand it in depth, but understanding why some people may struggle is important if it's any of you guys in this room. And I know metabolic flexibility is something that we've gone through in depth at different stages in the past. So there is videos in the library that will go through those for you. But when we look at lipolysis just in of itself, now remember, lipolysis is just the liberation of fatty acid, no more, right? So it's not actually the burning of it. It's taking fat out of fat cells and putting them into circulation. So when the body senses a low energy state, it'll release hormones like epinephrine, or you guys in North America will call like adrenaline, noradrenaline, and glucagon. Glucagon, think of it as like glucose is gone, right? So low energy state. They'll signal to the cell to start releasing certain hormones, like hormone sensitive lipase. And these will come on and start to cleave fatty acids off of glycerol. So all a fat molecule is a glycerol backbone with three little fatty acids stuck at the bottom. And these hormones will come and start to snip them off and allow them out into circulation. So you'll get free fatty acids and glycerol floating in circulation. Okay. Now, can anybody tell me what hormones? So if epinephrine and glucagon actually stimulate this, what blocks it? Come on, it's the dreaded hormone that everyone is afraid of. Very good, Kurt. Insulin. Now, insulin's not all bad. People look at insulin as this bad thing. It's just generally an anabolic hormone for the most part. But in constant release of insulin, it can cause issues where it'll block fat loss. Like, because we all want to be anabolic, right? Because we're all trying to build muscle. But that balance between catabolism and anabolism is very important, because when we're constantly catabolic, we grow everything, right? So we grow fat cells, we'll grow amyloid plaque within the brain, we'll increase coronary calcium, we'll do all these other things. It's not just muscle growth, right? So insulin will tend to block this. And it's about, this is an ebb and flow. It's a yin and a yang. Like when you're fed and insulin is high, yeah, this gets blocked for the most part. There'll still be some liberation. But whenever you hear like insulin resistance, it's funny because people think that when you're insulin resistant, you don't liberate fat. You actually do, because when this cell stops listening to insulin, it will keep releasing fatty acids into the bloodstream. That's when you see high triglycerides on a blood test, for example. But it doesn't actually mean that we burn them. That's really important to remember, because there's another step to this fat loss equation that we go through next. Ah, sorry, that's just emphasis that we have to get some sort of balance between catabolism and anabolism. But then what happens? So like these fatty acids come through the bloodstream and eventually they hit the cell, right? So if the cell doesn't have enough substrates to produce energy, it'll start to pull fatty acids out of circulation into the cell. And then eventually they'll make it to the mitochondria to be broken down to create energy. You can create a little bit of energy outside in the cell, but it's not very effective. But this is where metabolic flexibility can be a problem for certain sects of the population. So when you hear people that get like reactive hypoglycemia, for example, because their inability for a multitude of reasons to be able to pull fatty acids out of circulation and to use them for energy is a real problem. Now, it doesn't mean you can't lose body fat, but the problem is you're very much dictated by your appetite then. Because when glucose drops like that, then all of a sudden you can't get fatty acids effectively out of circulation. So blood sugar drops. Therefore, you become extremely hungry, hangry, agitated, lightheaded, and it becomes an issue. So metabolic flexibility is really, really important. If you've never gone through that, please go back and look at some of the old ones that we've done on metabolic flexibility. So whether that's an oxygen issue, which you find in a lot of people. So like if your coach, if you're new to the training side of things and your coach is trying to get you on a bike just to do aerobic work, it's because at the very end of creating energy here, we need oxygen. And without proper availability of oxygen, these mitochondria won't work well. They won't produce energy effectively. You'll be tired. You'll have blood sugar swings. You'll be dictated by your appetite. Chances are depressed. Chances are mood swings, all the other issues that tend to go along with it. So it's important to emphasize that metabolic flexibility is the end stage of all of this. So doing your aerobic work allows you to be in a position to be actually able to use fats effectively so that you can produce energy from them, so that the stuff that you liberate can be used effectively. I hope that makes sense, guys. So that's the end of it, right? And that's all that fat loss, all that it is. There's a little bit more to it than that, but in generalities, that's what it is. So emphasizing metabolic flexibility and its importance. Now, it'd be interesting to know if you guys have any questions about that. If any of you guys have any particular issues that you're struggling with in fat loss, one of the important things to remember here before anybody does start asking me questions is if you guys aren't super accurate with tracking calories, you have to start there. Like before you go into the physiology of this, I don't know if anybody knows the statistics, but it's quite damning. So general population, if I was to follow one of you guys aren't quite general population. You guys are a little bit longer in the tooth than that now. So most of you can eyeball food and get pretty close in terms of what the calories are. But if I follow general population around and I track everything they eat, at the end of the day, if I ask them how much they ate, they're not lying. It's just what they remember. They'll underestimate by 50%. The amount of, I dealt with women for an awfully long time before I started working with men. And women, the amount of women that used to come into me saying they're eating 1,000, 1,200 calories a day and they're not losing body fat is unbelievable. And generally, at those low calories, it just isn't true. But if you guys have any questions, whether that's nutritionally, training, mindset, more than happy, and I'm here to listen. Nothing top of
Greg,
mind.
I'll
Go
throw
ahead.
a question out. It's not very well formed, but I think I'm actually with you on UK time at the moment, so I'm sweating here. I've got a fan blasting away as well, man. I'm feeling
It's
you.
unbelievable. We're just not set for this kind of weather.
It's ridiculous. But my question is like this, and it's probably a question for the group as well. I think Andrew's working very hard with me at the moment on the getting the food right. And I think I've raised this question before. Like I think, and you did throw in at the end there about questions around the mindset. And I think in your experience, I mean, Andrew's trying pretty hard to keep me tight. I think it's the difference between going and nailing a workout and getting the instant return versus the longer, slower burn of there's no instant reward to not, to being tight. And I know there's a bit in around goal setting and being very clear on the path and the journey. And, we've talked about that a lot in the group. Like, is there anything that comes to mind? I mean, there's no silver bullet or miracle cure, but I mean, knowing this kind of thing is really important. So Andrew made me stay up and stay on the call tonight. But like, is there anything in your experience around, is it worth digging more into this, learning a bit more about it? Does that help? Tracking calories, I think, is the best thing, but anything else in your experience, Greg?
I would say with learning more about this, probably not, right? The only reason that there's no harm in learning more about this, like, I mean, if it's something that you're particularly interested in, but like, it's like, no, like telling an alcoholic, teaching them like the effects of alcohol won't exactly make them stop, right? So when I think about mindset with long-term goals like that is, I think you have to put something tangible, and you have to base it around what actually is your reasoning for doing it and what's the purpose for doing it, I think can be really important with that. So like tie it into something. Ben will back me up, but it would
Yeah,
something.
so Keith, could you say your question again? Are you trying? I just want to understand your question. So, are you trying to understand a more effective mental framing to stick with your diet?
Yeah, it's the like with the work with the workouts. Like, it can be a flat outside, it can be whatever. Like, there's nothing's going to stop me from getting to the gym. The diet's good, but I've got to go to another level now, and Andrew's trying to dial it up. And it's just that I'm not doing badly, I'm not going off the rails, but it's that how do I get the mindset in where it's like, now I've got to shift to another gear, but there's no, it's not like a workout where you go and nail it and get the pump and you feel great. And it's kind of, if there's no silver bullet, like I know, but is there a tip or an idea around how to really stay the course and see where these little baby steps are going to take you in the long term as a guide, or is there a better way to kind of dial the brain in on it?
I think there's a lot of different directions that I could respond to this, but the first thing I would say is I think mindset is bullshit when it comes to something like diet. No one has willpower. You either have habit or values, or you value it, right? Like, willpower in a circumstance like this is like, and even discipline, I think, is overstated or inaccurately stated in this case. Either you have a really good habit or you have a really big purpose. So, like, I would encourage you just to create the habit long term of, like, this is how I eat at this time of the day, and I don't diverge from that, which can be a very strong way to adhere to a meal plan. Or find a purpose. I think it's one or the other, man. Like, either you're living objectively, meaning I have a goal and I'm going to move toward it, and I have nothing in my way that's going to stand in my way because it's so high on my value hierarchy, or I've just created the habit. And the goal can create the habit, or the habit can create the end result. But I don't think it's like a mind over matter. Like, I have to be strong-willed and disciplined. It's fucking bullshit. Either you have the habit or you have the objective, which is the value. That's what I would say, man.
Awesome, guys. That's brilliant. Thanks so much.
Greg, I got a question.
Go ahead, brother.
Is it possible that you can go too low on calories and work backwards? I'm trying to say is sometimes I notice that if I go real low on calories that week, that day or two, that the weight might go up a little bit and maybe stabilize the same. Is there a point that you need to go so far under your maintenance?
I don't believe so. So I know, right? The problem, I think, sometimes, and like, I think the problem sometimes with yourself is sometimes you get driven by the daily data. So maybe when you drop calories excessively, maybe you get a stress response and you retain water, quite possibly, right? So you might get a couple of days, but generally speaking, the more you pull calories, the more weight you will lose. Now, where that weight will come from may vary then slightly, depending on how much protein you're taking in at that same time. Of course, it's important to remember that. But I think the more we pull calories, the more weight that you're going to lose. I think we went through a difficult period with you hormonally where things were changing quite dramatically. So it was really hard to pick what was actually working at that time. But I think, like, so for example, if I gave you 2000 calories for 2 weeks and you dropped a pound each week, if I gave you 1400 calories for 2 weeks after that, you drop more weight. Now, there's still laws of diminishing returns where, like, you may not drop 2 pounds then each week, but you still drop more body fat.
Okay.
So the one thing worth mentioning, Lewis, and I think Greg already mentioned this, is when you drop your calories, the first thing that people unconsciously do is stop moving. So oftentimes when you drop your calories, then you don't notice how much less you move. And it's pretty immediate and it's pretty unconscious. That could, I know I'm kind of notorious for that. Like, when my calories are high, I move so much. And I don't think I move little when my calories are low, but I certainly don't move. I don't feel as, like, energized and active and, like, wanting to run and do the extra stuff. So I find I do better on a higher calorie diet, or at least moderate calorie, but not low, because I just move so much. Like, I'm always running, I'm always playing, I'm always doing something, and my body fat falls off fast. If I drop my calories too low, it's like a strain for me to, like, I'm like, I got to go for a bike ride, go to the gym. Like, I like the idea of fueling performance first. But that, again, is a personality-based thing. Like, I would much rather be super active.
Okay. Thanks.
Anybody got anything else, especially around mindset now that we got Ben here?
So real quick about mindset, guys. I think I may have talked about this a few months back, but like, I really think mindset comes down to this binary conversation that goes on in your head. You're either living objectively and moving toward a target, or you're not. And so you're either living objectively or subjectively. Objectively means I have a goal, I have a target, I'm moving in the direction of it, and I'm intentionally creating daily habits or tasks to move me in that direction. Or I'm living subjectively based on the way I feel in the moment. I think that may be an oversimplification, but it's a really strong mental framing of like it's of the necessity and importance of setting targets, setting objectives, and moving toward those. And then the objectives can't be arbitrary, in my opinion. They can be for some people, but they shouldn't be arbitrary. They should be ultimately in some way connected to your value hierarchy. So if I value my family at the highest and best, or I value my social status, or I value my finances, it's best that you find some way to consciously connect your goals to those values. And that's going to just make your adherence so much easier for you, right? If someone's like, "Hey, your kids aren't going to eat," you're like, "Well, fuck, I'll do whatever it takes." For me, it was like we're going on stage with the Mr. Olympia. Like, I'm not going to go on stage with Mr. Olympia and not be in amazing shape. You know, like there's got to be something that drives you personally. And sometimes we look outside of ourselves and go, "Oh, this thing drives Ben, or this thing drives, I don't know, the Rock, or whatever." Like, no. Like, you need to find what drives you, or you're going to fail. Because when stuff starts to get hard, it becomes very easy to rationalize, well, this one thing doesn't make a difference, and it doesn't. But at the end of the day, living and moving in the direction of your targets is, I think, just the most effective way to do it. Not the only way, but the most effective.
I think that's also like it kind of segues into something I wanted to touch on as well, like briefly. I think the pursuit of health, I know we look at health and health can be quite objective, but when you look at mindset for the vast majority of people, when people are unhealthy, their head is full of noise. And I've got like a good like anecdote for that. So like I've got one client in particular who was suffering with horrible digestive issues for a really long period of time, and I was really struggling to actually find a method to break through with it. I finally found something, and he emphasized it as his issues started to clear, it's like the cloud started to shift. So as he's actually started to achieve a certain level of health, he actually felt for the first stage in a long time where he could actually start to plan for the future again. So I think the pursuit of health kind of goes in line with whatever your goal setting may be, because it allows you to get rid of some of that noise in your head or some of that negative chat that tends to go on as well.
Man, I love that. And so I just literally had a client today who's struggling with anxiety. And I was like, man, people disconnect or they don't draw the connection between the mind and the body, right? Psychology and physiology are inextricably linked. And so obviously psychology can create anxiety, but so can physiology. So if we move ourselves in the direction of health, we create more positive physiological responses, but we also create more positive thinking pathways, right? Living from your prefrontal cortex, and Kerr can speak to this stuff as well. You know, getting yourself out of the amygdala-based thinking that really is just perpetuating the stressful loop of negativity for many people, or doom thinking, or anxious thinking. And like, I think a healthy body—I don't know that it's a prerequisite, but it's absolutely an asset when it comes to creating the ideal mindset, especially because you know you're winning, right? If I constantly do, if I set a goal and I follow through, I set a goal and I follow through, you get this dopamine-based mind, brain. You're like, I'm always winning. I'm always winning. I feel confident and my self-belief goes up. So that would be my thought around how the body and the mind just have to be connected. Not to be acknowledged as connected. They're obviously connected, but we don't always acknowledge it.
Come on, guys, we got a few minutes. Anyone else got any questions that you want to go through? Oh, so somebody mentioned actually quickly. Sorry, Morn. Is there an app or a way to track your calorie intake more accurately? Yeah, like there's loads out there. Probably like if you're looking to get into more data. That's a
Phenomenal.
chronometer. Thank you. Chronometer can probably be the most beneficial. They all have some sort of variance in terms of calories, though. So there'll be a 5% difference either way in the vast majority of them. But it kind of comes out in the it does come out in the wash a little bit. So it's important if you want to track more data and you want to see vitamins and minerals, then chronometer can be really beneficial for them.
Hey Ben, one last thing. So after you talked about mindset, I think I had the concept of mindset completely wrong all this time. When I thought of mindset, I was always thinking about how easy the weight is. It's like Roddy Coleman always say, lightweight, lightweight, and think positive and focus on the muscle you're using, I thought. But you're saying it's more of a setting a goal, right?
Well, I think mindset has many different contexts, Lewis. So your mindset around the weights can certainly be one direction to take. I don't think thinking that it's light is always useful. I think potentially useful. Sometimes I try to make it feel really heavy. Sometimes I may have 200 pounds on the bar and I'm like, I want to make this feel like 1,000. It just depends what I'm focused on. So yeah, I think mindset contextually can go in so many different directions. So yeah, if you want to ask a specific question about like how to approach the weight, that way what you're getting at, like what mindset should you take around how to get the most out of your weight workout?
Well, yeah, because I kind of focus on the muscle I'm working on, and I'm concentrating that the muscle is contracting and everything.
Yeah. So my context is always trying to take an internal perspective. I try to feel what's happening inside of my body. Now, there's value in taking an external perspective, meaning like I'm just going to try to move this weight from point A to point B. But I think in what we're trying to do in the muscle building perspective, it's like I want this. Basically, the way to think about this is every muscle has two ends. One is the origin, one's the insertion. And all I'm thinking is insertion to origin, insertion to origin. Try to pull with one muscle toward the midline of the body, and do that as specifically and intensely as I can. That's really it. Like, I think when it comes to the muscle, I'm just trying to create as much intramuscular tension as I possibly can. And the closer you can get, like, I think thinking about the weight is a mistake. I think thinking about the machine is a mistake. I think thinking about the muscle for me, is more difficult to learn, but way more effective long term.
Okay.
So I think it sounds like you're on the right track.
All right. Thank you.
We good, gents?
Good boys. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you all being here. Greg, great presentation as always, man. Really, really useful. You do a great job. Really good. A lot of insights on fat loss, man. Thank you.
Much appreciated,
Thanks,
gents.
Greg.
Thank you.
Thanks, boys. Have a great evening.
You too.